From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of September 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll hear the beginning of Commodity Week, a great program. Actually, we recorded this morning with Chris Hurt and Todd Hubbs, both agricultural economists from Purdue and U of I, respectively, and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. A bit later in the program, we'll check the ag news, and we'll check in, too, with the soil fertility specialist at Purdue about nitrogen rates and corn and anhydrous ammonia applications in his state. And that all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Friday afternoon. We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, good Friday afternoon to you, Mike.
You too, Todd. I hope you're having a nice one.
Oh, yeah. We had a great week. We spent some time yesterday over at Purdue at their field day. That was a lot of fun. And then, of course, today we watched the markets go down after a really good, or at least in soybeans, a few cents, after what was a pretty good rally for the week. What did you make of the situation?
Well, a lot of moving parts. And certainly the hurricane took up a lot of the bean space and a lot of the oxygen in the bean market. North Korea probably also took up quite a bit of oxygen in the outside markets, and that spilled over into the dollar and crude oil and bond markets. And then the Federal Reserve also made some comments, both officially and unofficially. And obviously then we have the USDA report. And I think probably the best thing to report as we go into the report week next week, based upon the numbers that I look at, that elasticity model I look at with 345 September corn or thereabouts being traded. Trade is still pricing in about a 2.3 billion bushel carryover, so no real yield change expected in the corn if that model is correct. And in the beans at 955 in the September contract, we're trading still around a 440 million bushel carryover. So maybe a little bit of a tightening is due in terms of the carryover levels and the yield levels going down in both corn and beans. If you ask me, given our weather pattern the last 20 days, market's not pricing it in right now if you look at the models.
Why do you think that's the case?
Well, I think two things. When it comes to the wheat and the corn, you're just not going to get off the negative investor sentiment without the USDA or actual corn yields changing the momentum and changing that sentiment by the investors. You look at the dollars at a 2.5-year low, some of the moving averages that we're looking at right now, the 50-month moving average, we're down below for the first time since, I think, 2011. Gold is above its 100-month moving average. It's trading back to close to its 2016 highs. But even these things, even these inflationary things, are not moving the dial right now. And I think it really goes back to the supply-demand fundamentals of the feed grain. So beans this week, you saw it run as much as it could. We ran from, roughly a low a couple weeks ago of 935 up to the 977 area on the idea that maybe the bean crop is getting tighter because of the weather, but it was pulled back or not allowed to go any higher by the feed grains. I think secondly, the North Korean situation, if they shoot a missile Saturday and it is not straight up in the air or over the ocean and it actually has a trajectory, we're probably at a point where we're going to shoot that thing down, if you ask me, between the United States, South Korea, and Japan. So then you have to triangulate and factor in what does that mean for the United States and China when it comes to the trade. I think we saw a lot of that in the bean price action this week, as well as the hogs.
That may have been in the bean price action, but it would seem to me that that would be pretty devastating if that were to happen, and Sunday night and Monday could be mighty rough. I don't know. You're the analyst and I'm not, but it sounds dangerous.
Oh, it is. And I think this is where between the NAFTA renegotiations, which actually the second round ended this week in a very supportive mindset, all three sides saying they're making headway, all three sides saying they're going to get the job done by the end of the year. But you're right. These are unknowns. These are uncertainties. And this kind of goes back to what we talked about last week, the farm show and on the closing comments. How do you protect that risk reward? Where's your risk? Where's your hedging and your ability to protect for the downside? And for me, I firmly believe that the yields are going down both in corn and beans at this stage. The trade does not believe that based upon the rhetoric that I hear. So I like buying the bean puts and leaving the corn open because there are just no premium in the corn and wheat markets at this point.
Hmm. Other markets you've been watching and want to talk about for the day?
Yeah, you know, one of the things, again, next week, a big uncertainty is this hurricane and what it's going to do to the gasoline demand. We're seeing shortages all over Florida. We're probably going to start seeing them in Georgia this weekend. And there's going to be a shortage because our unleaded gasoline stocks are at the lowest level since November of last year. This means that we're going to have to refine more, and yet we're waiting on the recovery of Hurricane Harvey and the refineries to get back up to full steam. But the bottom line is we're pulling demand forward in gasoline at the expense of crude oil. We're going to blend more ethanol. So this goes back to the USDA report. Not only are there supply issues that the USDA, I think, has to address, there's demand issues, namely the feed, the ethanol, the soybean exports, 16-17 closed this past week, and we're about 63 million bushels better in exports at the end of this past marketing year than the USDA thought in August. So lots of numbers to look at next week.
Yeah, there'll be a whole bunch of numbers to look at. Hey, thanks so much. And one last thing from you very quickly, livestock side.
Really nice week. Beef exports were announced January to July. Beef exports up 11% by volume. The demand is coming around for the beef, and it's very welcome at these price levels.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting from Atchison, Kansas. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Next week on Tuesday evening, I'll be out and about right here in Champaign County at the Farm Bureau building. That's the U of I Extension Building 2 out on the west side of Champaign Country Fair Drive there. At 7 o'clock, we'll have a panel discussion. This will be the day of the report next week, so the USDA numbers will be out. Kurt Kimmel will be with us that evening from Bates Commodities, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing, and Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing. Our thanks to the Champaign County Farm Bureau Marketing Club and U of I Extension for sponsoring the program. It's open, and you're certainly welcome to come at 7 o'clock at the Champaign County Farm Bureau building next Tuesday evening. That'll be the same day as the USDA reports. Speaking of which, we talk a little bit about those during Commodity Week. You'll hear a portion of that program in the next few minutes on the Closing Market Report. And if you can stay with us for the second half hour of our program on the home station, you'll hear the whole of Commodity Week. Otherwise, it airs on many of these radio stations over the weekend, or you can just visit us online and listen to the program there at WILLAG.org. Now, up next, the agricultural news. We'll start with some information that comes from USDA. Gary Crawford has more about how Secretary Sonny Perdue is trying to make his agency more efficient.
From day one, Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue has voiced several goals, among them
to make USDA the most effective, the most efficient, and the best managed department in the federal government.
And to that end, this week, Perdue announcing several realignments within USDA, mostly involving taking similar mission functions in different USDA agencies and putting those functions into one agency. Example, both the Farm Service Agency and the Ag Marketing Service have food commodity procurement functions. Perdue is putting both those functions into the Ag Marketing Service. But farmers and grain traders probably will be most affected by the plan to merge all the commodity grading and inspection functions, including grain inspection packers and stockyards administration, into the Ag Marketing Service. Plus, Warehouse Act functions now being done by Farm Service Agency also will go into the Ag Marketing Service. A full list of realignments can be found at USDA.gov. Perdue says the idea is to provide its clients with what they need when they need it.
And when we find areas where we can modernize and improve, that's what we're going to do.
In Washington, Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Oh, let's stay with some changes that may be happening in Washington, D.C., but we'll turn our attention to the Farm Bill as Texans work to assess and begin cleaning up the mess left by Hurricane Harvey. Cotton farmers there are looking for ways to recover. Texas Farm Bureau spokesperson Gene Hall says there are federal programs available to assist growers, but those programs likely will not be enough. For cotton growers in Texas, it's estimated that the state's expected 2 million bale cotton harvest will decline by 300,000 to 400,000 bales. Texas Farm Bureau has been supportive of changing federal support for cotton in the 2018 Farm Bill.
It's been a tough go for cotton, and cotton is not in Title I of the farm program. We believe it should be. It needs to be. The price for cotton has been low. The costs are increasingly higher, and hopefully this disaster will kind of emphasize that need. And without that, we're going to be looking at an exodus of cotton producers from this industry, and it could happen sooner than a lot of people believe.
Hall says the last farm bill was written during good times for agriculture. The situation has changed since then.
We made the mistake in the last farm bill of assuming that times were always going to be good, I think. Agriculture was in pretty good shape when the last farm bill was written. But now that we've had hard times, and with an exclamation point called Harvey right at the end of that, we need for cotton to be a full partner in the farm bill.
For his part, House Agriculture Chairman Mike Conaway of Texas told a farm bill listening session recently that cotton has, quote, got to get back into Title I, offering some hope for cotton growers to see the change made in the next farm bill. Cotton has not been included in the Title I programs, and it would require some restructuring or at least some reallocation of funding if it were to be added. This is one of the places that compromise may need to be made for the Farm Bill 2018, as producers and their representatives work within the confines of the limited budget, which is not expected to expand. And finally today, dicamba in Monsanto, Arkansas, is poised to become the only state to ban use of dicamba, a key herbicide for use on Monsanto's new Roundup Ready Extend crops. And the company is pulling out all the stops to make sure that does not happen. Monsanto yesterday petitioned the state's plant board and sent a letter to Governor Asa Hutchinson of Arkansas calling for him to reject a state task force's recommendation that use of dicamba be banned after crops have emerged from the soil. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Well, yesterday, you know, I was over at Purdue at the Beck Ag Center for the field day. I took some time to talk to their fertility specialist, that's Jim Camberato, about nitrogen use in corn. Since we were in West Central Indiana, we took that up first. He says soils there are really efficient.
This is the highest yielding part of the state. It also has the lowest nitrogen fertilizer requirement because the soils provide more nitrogen than other areas of the state, and we lose less nitrogen from fertilizer applications. So,
what do you tell them about N rates that they should be using for the coming corn season?
Well, with the low corn grain prices and good fertilizer nitrogen prices, that the optimum rate is about 175 pounds of nitrogen per acre for this area of the state.
This would be for corn following soybean?
Yes, corn following soybeans. And we add a corn penalty for continuous corn, and it's probably around 40 to 50 pounds N per acre more than what we recommend for corn after soybeans.
This would be for fall-applied anhydrous ammonia?
Well, that would be for side dress nitrogen. We figure that we might lose 10 to 15% of the nitrogen in fall applied anhydrous on average. And so one would consider maybe adding a little more if they had a warm, wet winter and they expected that they lost some nitrogen to the atmosphere or to the tile drainage.
And finally, one last item, because producers like to get into the field in the fall. They like to do a little tillage. Sometimes they get a little anxious about putting nitrogen on early. Roughly speaking, in the northern, I don't know, two-thirds of Indiana, when might they be able to get in and fall apply nitrogen safely?
Yeah, so we've looked at this location, and it's varied anywhere from the middle of October to the first week in December. So it's really a year-by-year decision. Most of the time, middle to late November, the soil temperature has fallen below 50 degrees and rapidly goes towards freezing.
Hey, thanks so much, Jim.
Thank you.
Jim Camberato is an agronomist and soil fertility specialist for Purdue University. I spoke with him yesterday at the Beck Ag Center at their field day. Now let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Eric Snodgrass is here. He's from Agrible. Eric, There's a great big Irma out there, that hurricane. What can you tell me about it?
Well, Todd, days like today are pretty tough to be a meteorologist. And the big reason for that is, while I'm absolutely fascinated to watch this massive hurricane make landfall in Florida sometime on Saturday evening, I do understand that we're putting 20 million people at risk in Florida. Hurricane Irma has really tightened its forecast track over the last 36 hours, and it looks to be a landfall right along the southern tip of the state, probably at Category 3 plus intensity, maybe even a Cat 4 or Cat 5. You know, the last time a Category 5 strength hurricane hit the United States was Hurricane Andrew in 1992. And Andrew is about half the size of Irma. Irma is about the size of the state of Texas. And it has been a powerful hurricane for the last 10 days. The water temperatures out ahead of Irma, which is still right now going through the Bahamas, are very warm, approaching 90 degrees. And that's going to fuel this hurricane as it makes landfall. I'm expecting hurricane strength winds, that's greater than 74 miles an hour, to stretch the entirety east to west across the Florida Peninsula as the hurricane moves towards the Florida-Georgia line on Sunday. So this will be a catastrophic event. It will definitely impact agriculture across the state of Florida, into Georgia, into South Carolina, into Alabama, and nearby states. Thankfully, to the north of all of that, where we are here in the Corn Belt, there's been a very cool and dry air mass that's moved in, and that's going to really weaken the northern edge of Irma as it moves through on Sunday. And so that will at least limit some of the the lingering effects of Irma as it moves toward the north over the coming days. But just to stress this again, Irma will likely be one of these generation-defining weather events. I'm expecting catastrophic damage from both storm surge, wind, and incredibly heavy rains. Thankfully, Irma is moving fast, which means that it won't stall like Harvey did and just drop enormous amounts of rainfall. But the wind damage and the storm surge along the coast will be devastating for some people. So this will be a very exhausting weekend for a lot of us, as we have to deal with this incredible hurricane. If we stretch things out a little bit, just so everyone knows, the peak in hurricane season is September 11th, so we're just halfway through the season, and the temperatures and the wind shear values along the Gulf, which are the two biggest determining factors on hurricane strength and how long they last, will remain optimal for more of these systems to occur. But as we move into September, I am seeing one important feature that could help out with all of this, maybe have an impact on the Corn Belt, and that is we're going to see the large ridge that's been over the western United States begin to spread and kind of flatten out over the east. And the translation there is that because of the subsidence we get in the atmosphere due to that circulation, that large ridge, we're likely going to see conditions drying down quite a bit through the month of September, certainly looking at a drier than average month for the month of September. We're really going to see some dry days coming up just in the next few days, but a dry month of September. And also we're going to start to return back toward a flow pattern that's more conducive to warmer than average temperatures. So after we kind of skirted our first frost threat this past Wednesday, where the frost really only hit one small section of far western Nebraska and then northern Minnesota, we're looking at a return toward a warmer pattern, which is going to remove that early frost threat for a while. But with that warmer pattern, we are going to be drying down. So there is a whole lot to be watching and looking at in terms of weather interaction, both in the Corn Belt and in the southeastern Florida. But again, I just want to stress that I am anticipating Hurricane Irma to produce catastrophic damage across the state of Florida. And just for some perspective, the state of Florida's population is like the state of Illinois plus another Chicago. So we're talking about a lot of people that will be impacted. And as those people attempt to evacuate, they have one direction to go, and that's north. And almost all of them are going to be trying to do that, at least those that don't decide to ride this one out. So this is a serious event, and please stay tuned. The best website to watch this would be National Hurricane Center. That's nhc.noaa.gov. That's nhc.noaa.gov. They're going to have the best information about this hurricane. So with that, I'm hoping folks down there are prepared and they're being safe. It's going to be a very, very long weekend.
Our prayers will be with them. Thank you so much for taking the time with us today. That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He's from Agrible, and wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report for Friday afternoon.